Hello and welcome to Resource Report, where we share with you important information about local nonprofits and resource organizations that support the community we share, produced by Pathways to Agency.
I am your host, Rainmaker. Today's show features Roland Carl, the Executive Director of the Lewis County Union Gospel Mission. I'm here in Lewis County Gospel Mission with Executive Director Roland. Will you introduce yourself to us, Roland?
Roland Carl.
Yeah.
And I'm from Montesano, Washington, and I've been here at the mission for just shy of 2 years now as the Executive Director.
It's been a minute then. So, Roland, can you tell me, what's the history of this place?
Sure. The mission was originally started in 1996 as a resource for people coming out of incarceration at Lewis County Jail. That was their primary objective at that point. They operated out of a little one-room bedroom house that they had a hot dog griller that they used to serve meals and provide services similar to what we do here, but it was specifically aimed at the recently incarcerated. Since then, because of the need for those who are just needy and or homeless, unsheltered in Lewis County, it's grown to cover a very broad spectrum of those in that situation, whether it's financial need, housing, whatever it happens to be.
Wow, that's really cool. And it just started, you know, that just goes to prove that you can start small. Start with what you have. Start from where you are. Meet people where they are. And in time, it will grow. It becomes something big and amazing. Oh, my God, I'm, like, getting emotional because it's just so cool.
Yes. It's amazing, the simple start with helping people from coming out of incarceration to today, where we serve well over 150 people almost every single day. And many of those, again, are coming out of incarceration, whether it's at the county level or the state level. Occasionally, we have people coming out of the juvenile detention, Green Hill, or other juvenile facilities. And we take care of all of them as best we can.
Okay, and what does that look like a kind of a process that people tend to go through when they're coming out of incarceration and then coming through here? What does that look like?
We try to actually get on the front end of incarceration. So it's basically as soon as they're arrested or in court in Lewis County, we try to make contact with them and make that contact so now when they come out of incarceration, they have real-life mentors and people that can help them make that transition back into society. We find that it's way more successful than not. If we wait until they're actually released, it's too late. They have other plans. They're going somewhere else. So our staff tries to run all the way through that from arrest to incarceration to release standpoint. So we have a relationship with them. We know what their needs are. As soon as they come out, they will either come here. We routinely go to the jail when they're coming back from the state institutions and pick them up there. They will come in here. We'll help them get some basic necessities, clothing, food, that kind of thing, for enough for at least a couple of days. Hopefully by that time we've set up with WorkSource or the community college to get them, WorkSource for jobs and then the community college for advanced education, some of them even GED. We also work real closely with drug and alcohol recovery and mental health facilities so that when they come out, they're set up to be as successful as it's humanly possible for them to be.
That's so wonderful. It's you know, going into such a traumatic environment and situation as incarceration, knowing right away that you've got somebody supporting you, that is so huge. Yeah. Because just it's a worse hell than where they were before that. And it's like you're providing another option
that
they know about right away.
We try to provide a road to recovery and wholeness so that they can be reunited with family and community they've left behind. We've often worked real closely in getting them reunited with separated family, children that have been disenfranchised, that kind of thing. And it's actually pretty successful, way more successful than the traditional. You go in, you serve your time, the doors clang behind you when you're released, and there's no support system out there or anybody who even cares in many cases. Unfortunately, that still happens in a lot of situations. We're one of 18 organizations around the state that actually tries to intervene with that and formally. So it's a very encouraging process.
That's wonderful. The campaign to transform the landscape of incarceration in this country has been ongoing and continues. And I feel like we're gaining strength, we who support that kind of structure. Things are changing. I believe it.
Yeah, we're confident of it. And I think the approach we've taken of being proactive is foundational to making it actually successful. So people can be successful when they come out, feel like they're returning as a valued member of community. That's without that, the success rate is like zero. So yeah.
All right. So tell me, please, about the different services. You've mentioned briefly some of it, but can you go through that a little more clearly?
We are primarily a day shelter and meals service organization. So we provide day shelter from 6:30 until 2 every day for folks, regardless of weather or whatever. We're open during those hours. We serve two meals a day, a breakfast and a lunch, breakfast at 8 o'clock and lunch at 12 noon. On the weekends, we serve a single meal at 9, brunch. And then we have all sorts of other services that we provide. We have a shower, so folks can get a shower Monday through Friday. We have restrooms they can use, including a full handicap accessible restroom. I should mention our shower is also fully handicap accessible. We have a clothing room, and folks can get a complete change of clothing once a week. And then if there are special circumstances, we make, if they've lost their clothing in a flood or whatever, we get them clothing. Or if they're going for a job interview, we will get them more than the once a week. If they're getting a shower and it has been less than a week, we get them clean clothes to put on when they get a shower. We also have a food pantry. It's a little different than a food bank. We are not allowed to be a food bank because we serve meals. Don't ask me why, but somebody made that decision. So we can assist people with enough for a single meal out of our pantry, and they can do that every day, but we don't give out food boxes like for a family or whatever. They're not allowed to.
Isn't there a Lewis County Gospel Mission food bank also?
There's a Lewis County food bank. It's not we partner with them, and they are able to give out, in fact do give out food boxes to community members that qualify. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for clarifying that, because when you look it up on Google Maps, there's both of them. One is just the mission, and one says food pantry behind it.
Yes. We get confused quite often, and there is a misconception that we're an actual food bank, but it's kind of a nomenclature issue, because we do provide food, but we don't qualify as a federally sourced food bank. So it's just a fine line between the two.
Yeah, that's important clarification for people to know. Yes. That's not maybe common knowledge. What else have you got? The clothing, you talked about the clothing and showers. What about the Bible studies?
We have Bible studies actively 3 times a week on Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays at 9 o'clock. We have a couple of different groups that come in and lead those. Anyone is welcome, not just our people that we serve, but anyone from community that wants to come in and join them is very welcome to do that. We try to be very centered and not too radically one way or the other as far as presenting the gospel. Sometimes that's a real temptation, but we try to be respectful of a whole slew of different denominational theological backgrounds and respect them all. So, like I say, anyone is welcome to join and have a lively discussion and yeah.
Right on. And then you have the jail ministry.
Yes, that's actively part of the reentry program. They kind of intertwine with each other in the jail. Our 2 staff people that are involved with the reentry are also chaplains at the jail, which has given us a great boots on the ground kind of access to that. And it's not easy to get that and to get the confidence of the local authorities to be allowed to do it. But we've been very successful here in Lewis County.
Yeah, right on. So you have a long list of current needs that are listed on the website.
Yes.
That people can go and look up.
Yes.
Yeah, can you just like name a few of those?
Well, we're always needing men's and women's size clothing in smaller sizes. Our people that we serve tend to be more slender than the average person in our population. So the smaller women's and in particular smaller men's, from 30-inch waist to 34 and 36-inch waist size for trousers and men's, and the mediums, shirts and jackets and that kind of thing. Always in need of those. We go through them quite often out of what we need to take care of our guests. So in the clothing, it's that. And then underwear, both men's and women's adult underwear, in the smaller sizes, are a constant need. Right at the moment, we're really good on socks, but that isn't always the case. Quite often, we are out and scrambling to find enough socks for everybody.
Never turn down socks.
No, never turn down socks. Never, ever, ever. Then the other thing would be just cold weather clothing this time of year. Coats, jackets, sweatshirts, rain gear. We get quite a few requests for it that we just don't get enough of it in to take care of folks. So rain gear is always, always, always welcome. If we don't have it, if it's in the summer, we put it out in the dry storage and make it available in the right wet and rainy weather. So in the kitchen, we're always looking for staples, things like milk and eggs, butter. We do have an excess of cheese right at the moment, but generally we would need cheese, but that's exception right now. Potatoes are always a staple that we go through a lot of. Let's see, was there anything else? Oh, sugar. Sugar is a huge one in our kitchen.
Coffee.
We go through on an average 2 to 2.5, sometimes 3 of the big 5-pound cans of coffee every single day.
I believe it.
Yes. Coffee, yeah. We have a 5-gallon coffee urn out there that gets refilled 5-6 times during the day, year-round. Doesn't seem to matter.
Do y'all, like, aside from just, like, people bringing stuff, like community members bringing y'all donations, do y'all get any big donations or small donations, food, anything from, like, say, I don't know, thrift stores or other corporations? Y'all are across the street from Dairy Gold.
We used to get a lot of, mentioning Dairy Gold, we used to get a lot of donations from right across the street from the plant. Their corporate they had a corporate reorganization about a year and a half ago, and they no longer do that. Occasionally, they will bring stuff over that's part of the overproduction on their line, but we don't get just they were providing us all the milk we ever needed for years in the corporate office. Said, no, you can't do that anymore.
So. Those darn corporate offices.
Yeah, yeah. And I get it. They're counting their pennies.
I don't get it. Counting their pennies? They have enough pennies.
They probably do.
Yeah. Let's be real.
I was trying to be really kind and generous there.
We can be kind, but we can still be real.
Yeah.
So y'all primarily focus on people going through incarceration, but you earlier mentioned that y'all do help just people who need those kind of assistances that aren't going through jail. Can you talk about that?
Sure. We are always here to help people get, if they need mental health counseling or whatever, we have contacts with several of the mental health resources here locally. And we have invited all of them to come in and intervene right on the spot with our guests. And occasionally they do that. And if there's a need for a specific referral, sometimes somebody's really having a bad mental health day, we try to encourage them to be involved with somebody that can provide those services. Most of our staff is actually trained to recognize mental health issues and to be able to at least provide some on-site support for them. And the same thing goes with the drug and alcohol addictions and those kind of things. We resource with a number of other local resources that can provide inpatient or outpatient treatment for that. And there's not a day goes by we don't encourage folks to take advantage of those things. We'll take them there. We will introduce them. We'll act as their advocate, whatever we need to do. We'd like to provide those services in-house, maybe someday, but for right now, we have to source those outside of our facility.
That's wonderful. Y'all actually drive people and take people to appointments and set up their appointments and get them going?
We advocate all day long for folks and get them where they need to be, even if it's just a trip to the bus station or to the Adult and Family Services offices to get set up with their food stamps or to Department of Licensing to get their ID card or whatever. We're gonna do our best to make that happen for them and get them those things. We've had folks come in and actually represent the free phone programs with the government. That's kind of been in limbo the last month and a half or so. We're hoping that can be regenerated. There was a distinct lack of availability of the phones, and then funding has kind of dried up for that. So we're hoping to get that redone. But yeah.
Yeah, okay. So do y'all work with legal aid services with them?
Yes, we do. And we can refer them to legal aid, be an advocate again with them at legal aid, because many of them don't understand the legal processes at all. And mm-hmm. So it's important to have somebody that can say, hey, this is what you need to ask your attorney and get that resourced, or we can actually call the whoever has been their attorney is and say, hey, we know this person, you might want to pursue this avenue with them.
Right on. And then you said that y'all catch them at the time of arrest. How do you do that?
Well, since our two chaplains are in the jail, they know when those folks come in, when they're booked into the jail.
Oh, okay.
So they're new to the population. They make a contact. They give them we have a handout flyer that goes to them with it in the first 24 hours there of being in the county jail. They get that flyer. Here's our services. Here's what we can provide for you. So they get that right within hours of an arrest.
So the people stationed there at the jail, that's like they're working. They're from here. They're
from here, right? They go down two or three times a day from here to the jail, do their intake at the jail, and make those contacts on a daily basis. Quite often, they're in there doing an assessment for drug or alcohol treatment, or an assessment for mental health care. And sometimes those visits take half hour, 40 minutes. And
how does the jail receive y'all? Like, how do the people at the jail, like, are they all cool with y'all? Do they work with y'all? Does anybody give y'all trouble?
They are very, very appreciative of the contacts we have. Lewis County Sheriff's Office and jail staff has been over backwards to help us out and make sure that we're getting those folks taken care of. I'd like to tell you that the same was true with the Department of Corrections at the state level, but not so much.
So the county works with y'all better than the state. What's the deal with the state?
They have their own re-entry program where they have contractors that come in and do that. The attitude is we're stepping on their toes. Okay. So, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It's been a difficult row to walk down because there's been a lot of resistance at that level. And it depends a little bit on the facility, but all of them are kind of resistant. You want to be on their home wave list? No, you're not going to get on their home wave list. Well, we need to be on their home wave list because we're in this reentry program that's sponsored by the state of Washington. Well, we don't recognize that. Well, you're part of the state of Washington. Why don't? Yeah, it's.
Oh my goodness.
So it's been just.
I feel egos going on here.
Yes. It's yeah.
Oh, so what would you say, like state versus you guys with your program, which has a higher success rate?
Time will tell. My personal assessment is that we're going to have way more success than what theirs does. Theirs doesn't really start until like a month before release, whereas we're involved way up front in that program or process. And it's certainly not as thorough or as in-depth as what we do, and it's more about just providing a service and the numbers of service we provide rather than the success rate is kind of what it is. We're about success and not necessarily numbers.
Yeah, this reminds me of back, I want to say it was maybe the BLM COVID times period. I don't remember if it was like before that or after that or during that, but I remember that there was something I heard about happening in Seattle with like a home. There was some homeless camps in Seattle, and I don't remember what the organization was, unfortunately, off the top of my head, but there was an organization. They were like maybe a nonprofit or a mission or something. And what they were doing was they were actually going out there and providing services and helping the homeless camp people. And they were actually getting out of homelessness. They were getting into recovery. And the city came in and said, you can't do that. That's what we're doing. We're doing that. You can't do that. We won't let you. And then they shut them down. And then it just went back to the way it was.
Right.
And it's like this is it kind of feels like a similar thing. It's like, are they really trying to help? Because it doesn't look like they're really trying to help. Right. It looks like they're just like saying that, but making it more difficult. Is that the feeling that you have too?
It's a really significant way. That's a very accurate way of putting it. Yes, it's. I've been involved with homelessness and people in incarceration for a long time, and those organizations historically that are having the best success are those who are smaller nonprofits who have a genuine heart for the people and the services. As soon as government gets involved with it, that perspective is lost, and it's more about the money from a contract and, well, we had contact with so many X number of people, but there's not a consistency of success at the bottom line. It's very disheartening. Seattle has spent billions of dollars, Seattle and Lewis County and the state of Washington in that Seattle metropolitan area, to combat homelessness, and it has been a gross failure in every respect. And yet some of the smaller nonprofits have been very successful in being successful at recovery and getting mental health resources provided and on. I was reading statistically, government-run programs tend to be less than 5% long-term success, meaning less than 5 years after treatment of still being successful, whereas the smaller nonprofit, especially faith-based, that have a faith element in their programs, are as much as 60 to 80% successful. And so, yeah, there's a significant difference, and it's about the attitude and the reason we're doing it.
It sounds like there's a conflict of alignment. There's not a shared vision here between the state or the cities and the nonprofits, organizations, and the community that are actually providing real support. So that's what it makes it feel like, that their vision isn't the same.
I don't know that the vision isn't the same. I think people at the state level in politics or whatever, they see the urgency and the need. So there's money budgeted, but going through that budget process and getting it, the smaller nonprofits tend to not be able to qualify, meet the standards of providing services. So they get left out of that money pool for the most part. And so organizations that are set up to take advantage of that process then get the monies. And quite often those folks don't, it's more about the making the money than it is about actually helping people recover, helping people deal with their mental health issues and so on. And that's not to say all of them are that way, because there are quite a few of them that there are very genuine people involved on both sides of that card, but just seems that for some reason or another, there is a disconnect between what the states are providing and what the smaller nonprofits are providing.
Difference in values more than
yes.
Vision.
Well, and you know, like here, we are accountable to a small donor base. And our donors want to know that we're successful. Not only that, as a Christian organization, we have a responsibility, a moral obligation to fulfill the Great Commission and taking care of people. That's commanded in the Scriptures. So our staff and volunteers, when they come in here, they have that front of mind. On the other hand, somebody who's just come out of college, they've got this fancy sociology degree, and all may not have that foundational. They may have a heart for taking care of people, but they don't have that foundation under them to motivate them to do what they do. And so they're getting a paycheck and they're making money and they're feeling valued because of that, but they don't have that. A really fundamental values-based service orientation, and there's just a disconnect there that And I have to admit, sometimes we have them come in here that have that disconnect, too.
There's a lack of understanding, and the understanding is what brings the wisdom to be able to manage that appropriately.
Appropriately, yes, mm-hmm. Exactly, yeah. Yes.
What do you think that the community can do to change this situation with the difference in, you know, the disconnect that we were talking about between the government, basically, mm-hmm. and the nonprofits?
I think that's a difficult question. A lot of it has to do with our economic structure of how we support services for those who are in need or unhoused or whatever. We've tended in the last 70 years or so to depend on the government to provide those services, whereas pre-1950 we depended very much on our local, whether it was the church or the Grange or local organizations, to actually provide those what we would call welfare programs. Since then, our society has shifted to a more government-based, welfare state-based. And in that process, we've lost that that sense of ownership of those programs. They're out of sight, out of mind. So it's hard for the taxpayer that lives in their almost paid-for home on National Avenue in Chehalis. They have a hard time connecting with the social services that are being provided. I think one of the things that can help people make that connection is to actually volunteer in their community. I'm a huge advocate of volunteerism. Volunteering at our mission is not for everyone, but there are other places that people can volunteer that will help you bridge that gap emotionally and mentally to understand what the services are. Whether it's volunteering in a child care facility is a great example. All of those places need volunteers. They're all short-staffed. Volunteer at your local hospital. Volunteer at the senior center. I volunteered as a first responder for years, being a firefighter, EMT. Was in law enforcement forever. Those are great places to get a grasp on why services are the way they are, why they cost what they do, and to be connected with community in a different way than just living in a comfortable neighborhood, a cul-de-sac in middle class America. I know a lot of schools are requiring volunteer community service. I think that's actually a state requirement now for graduation in Washington. I think that's a great step. I love to have my grandkids come in here and see what's going on. See people who can't. When we're at a mission, we're dealing with people who can't make decisions for themselves on a day-to-day basis, but yet they're homeless on the streets. That's a problem.
Yeah, when you're in a constant state of survival mode through trauma and fear, there's a part of your brain that shuts down functioning or reduces that functioning.
Yes.
And you can't literally... You don't have the physical brain capacity to navigate those things, especially when you have limited options.
That's absolutely correct. Mm-hmm. From a psychological and physiological standpoint, that's many, many, many of these folks don't have. They've lost that cognitive ability to even just take care of basic survival needs. They no longer have that capability. So they end up sleeping under a bridge or in the back alleyway of a business, or someplace just to get sort of out of the weather. I socially I have a real problem with that. I don't think we need to criminalize homelessness or those kinds of things. But I do need, I am absolutely convinced as a society we need to do a better job of how we treat those folks. And at some point we need to decide there's a particular level of ability to care where we need to intervene. And right now we say, oh, they have the freedom and the liberty to be out there if they so choose. Well, they don't have the ability to make that decision on a rational basis. So, you know, if we want to deal with homelessness, we've got to recognize that. They can't make that decision. They cannot rationally make that decision.
It's called life happens to you. And sometimes life happens to you in a way that just makes it really hard to move forward in your life.
Yes, absolutely. So do we need to have more halfway houses where they can be, where their behavior and their addiction and their mental health can be monitored, and say, you know, you can't sleep under the bridge, but here's a place where you have some liberties, where you can be cared for, and people will genuinely care for you. The problem with that approach is that it costs money.
Mm-hmm.
It costs a lot of money.
Yeah, money seems to be the main problem everywhere. It's about money. What if we just didn't have money to deal with? You know, like maybe that would solve all the problems.
And to a certain degree, that is right. We are the most prosperous individual nation in the world, in world history, and we fail miserably in taking care of.
Yeah.
I remember taking a sociology class when I was in sociology, anthropology class in college, and the professor said, there are two things that are paramount to a successful society. One is, how do we take care of infants, children? And the other is, how do we take care of senior citizens? And I would add to that those who are dealing with mental health and addictions. How do we take care of those folks? Yeah, we continue to have issues with child abuse. We continue to have issues with elder abuse and domestic violence. That's not acceptable.
No.
It's not an acceptable value system where we have those issues. Situations like the Oakley Carlson situation in Oakville, that should never, ever have happened. And yet, that's just one case of thousands of them nationwide that happen every year, every year. So where do we say it's become, how do we say it's socially acceptable to intervene when a parent doesn't have the cognitive abilities to properly raise their children? And I've spent years doing child abuse investigation on a child abuse investigation team in Oregon. And one of the frustrating parts of that was judges and courts who would treat children as property of their parents and gave them the same rights as if they were the lawnmower that sat in their yard. Or no, they're not property. They are a gift. And you have a moral responsibility to take care of them, and abusing them isn't one of those responsibilities. Sorry, this is not acceptable.
Do y'all work with any other organizations in that also helps incarcerated individuals or something like that?
We haven't actively been involved with that type of organizations. You know, we're open to any of them that happen to come across our radar or whatever. We've got a whole list of them right now with that. But, yeah, there's a lot of folks out there that are doing that kind of things. We have worked with, and I don't remember the name of it, there's a local group that provides dogs to people coming out of incarceration. So
dogs?
Yes, pets,
oh.
Dogs. So, yeah, and Lenny's had a couple of those folks be involved. And
people need emotional support dogs.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
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 And it's a tough one.
To give a gift like that of a dog to people coming out of those situations, that's a life-changing moment for many people.
Yep. We would like to be significantly more involved with pets. Unfortunately, because of the health code regulations and being a food service, we can't allow them in the building unless they're a certified service animal. They can't be an emotional support.
No.
The state won't allow them in as emotional support. And we've had people we've had to turn away just because, I'm sorry, can't bring your
again
in here.
Pros and cons, man.
Yes, it is. So,
yeah.
And you understand that there's health risks with pets.
Sure.
But again, where do we draw that line?
Sure.
Yeah.
You were talking about some of your, you have an amazing list of experiences, firefighter, working for the police, first responding, like child abuse cases. That's an amazing repertoire. I totally see how you're an amazing executive director here, having all of that experience and wisdom that you've gained. So how was it that you came to be the executive director with all of that under your belt?
It's a long story. I spent 20 years in full-time law enforcement in Oregon. I was in the police chief of three different small communities in Oregon, including, and this is right after I graduated from high school or from college. The last community I was the police chief in was Madras, Oregon, when the Rajneesh were out at the Rajneesh Param Ranch. Madras was the closest community of any size to that operation, so I was involved with over 3,000 homeless people that were bussed in on Greyhound in the voter fraud scam that they were running, and was very actively involved in that. I ended up leaving law enforcement. There were people that didn't like the fact that I had moral values and standards and so on. So after fumbling around for a couple of years, I went to work for a major retail corporation, traveled part of the time with them all over the Northwest doing audits in their stores. And that's when I started volunteering as a volunteer fireman, got my EMT. Well, I had actually had my EMT first, got my first EMT certification in 1978. And so I'd had an EMT certification for a long time. Did the volunteer fire department thing. And then in 2014, I retired from Safeway and went to work for the Yakima Union Gospel Mission and did their was their facilities director. So I maintained all their facilities. We had like 30 different major buildings that we had to maintain. We housed as many as 400 people on a night-to-night basis in the facilities. We had a retreat camp up on White Pass that we maintained. Very active position, and I had a lot of staff and volunteers and so on that we managed there. My wife and I, she was the food service director there also. We both retired in 2020 and moved to Montesano to be closest to our middle daughter and her husband and three kids. And then in early spring of 2023, I got a call from the director at the Yakima Mission, and he said, you know, you've got the skill set and everything. I want you to get a hold of the Lewis County Gospel Mission. And the rest is history. So I've been here. I'll be here 2 years in April.
Wow.
My kids are all saying, Dad, you're just not doing a very good job of retirement. No, I'm not. Yeah, I've had a very colorful career in every place I've gone. I've been called a overachiever. I don't know, I'm an overachiever. I just like to be successful. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I feel yeah. I've been called ambitious before.
I have friends at the Montesano Police Department that I kind of skipped over, but I worked for Homeland Security for a few years.
Wow.
For 5 years, I was a technician or a technical provider. And so my friends over there at the Montesano Fire Department where I volunteered have seen me do things, jump off of fire trucks and stuff and go places that nobody would do. And they say, we know you were a hitman. You had to have been a hitman. I can't tell you what I did for Homeland Security. I can just tell you I was a technician. Well, we've seen the movies. We know what technicians do.
Oh, my goodness.
No, I was not a hitman. Never mind.
That's funny. So how do people get involved in different capacities?
We always have openings here for volunteers. Like most nonprofits, we seriously couldn't operate without the volunteers. So if somebody's interested, come in, fill out a volunteer application. We do have to have a background check on folks because of the clientele, and we do have small children that come in here occasionally, so we do need to kind of be on top of who's in here volunteering.
Do y'all drug test?
Not at this point, no. Mm-hmm. We have had a couple of incidences where people have come in intoxicated to help volunteer, and no, that's not okay. We're dealing with people who deal with alcohol abuse every single day, and so we have to guard against that in our staff and volunteers. Drug testing is always a possibility, but that's kind of the last resource that we want to do.
And then donations?
Donations are always again welcome, financial and or material donations. Financial donations historically are on the downward slide because of the economy and inflation. Donations have definitely not kept up with the inflation rate. So the dollar value of what we were getting in donations 5 years ago is significantly less than what it is today. And so it's financial donations are always appreciated. Material donations, whether it's in the clothing or food or the pantry, are always welcome. And there is a list on the webpage that they can refer to. We also have lists, little printed lists that we give out at our counter. And then if somebody asks for something specific, we can tell them. Do you need milk today? Yes, no, maybe. They can always give us a call, send us an email, message us on Facebook. We have somebody who monitors Facebook almost all day long, every day. So, yeah.
When can people come by and donate physical goods?
We're open at 7 o'clock every morning, and we close during the week at 2 p.m., and then on the weekends it's by 11:30. They serve the breakfast, and then they close at 11:30. So any of those times will be great.
So y'all have peer counseling, anything like that? What's training for volunteers look like?
We don't do a lot of training for them. Most of our volunteer positions are pretty much labor oriented, so it's a matter of showing you how to run the dishwasher or how we sort clothing or how you mop the floors, you know, those kinds of things. So we don't spend a lot of time on training. We do try to talk to our volunteers about how to de-escalate a situation if there is one, because that happens all the time. We talk to them about the trauma-informed so that they know when somebody's acting out. It quite often isn't because you're there, or they're just, it's part of the result of trauma. And we do encourage them to go to a trauma-informed class if there's one locally here, and there are generally several during the year that are available.
What are those places? What are they?
Let's see. The Gather Church in Centralia offers classes on that. Adult and Family Services and also occasionally will offer a class on trauma-informed interaction. I think I saw something that the library was sponsoring one too. So I think that's an important thing for everybody to be involved with, at least have some really basic understanding of it.
That's how we generate empathy and understanding in the community. Yes. And bridge these gaps.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we talk about the ACE study here all the time, adverse adolescent ACE experiences, which is basically trauma-based, and the relationship of those things to what happens when they come through our doors, because it's rooted in that childhood experiences 95% of the time. Are there adult experiences that can cause it? Absolutely. But the root of it all is in adolescence.
Absolutely. Is there anything else that you would like to share?
Oh my gosh. I think that one thing that I always try to remind people again is that we need to take care of our children. If we want to have a long-term solution to homelessness, poverty, incarceration, that really starts with children. It's my wife, since we retired, she's gone back to work for the school district in Montesano as a parapro, and she works with the challenged third and fourth graders. And she comes home almost every day and says, I know where our folks are coming from when we're in our missions.
Wow.
And
that's so real.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, those of us that have been around it, we can walk into that kind of a setting and we can say, oh, we can recognize the trauma that this child has gone through. We can recognize the mental illness or the early signs of it. And we really need to take care of those children way better than what we're doing. It will make a huge impact. Is it expensive? You bet it is. But
So
worth it. Yeah. Is it going to happen overnight? No. It's going to. We've got a problem that's been escalating for 100 years in our country.
At least.
And so, you know, it's going to take a while to recover from that. The statistics right now are showing that we've had double-digit increases in homelessness and poverty in the last 5 years, every year. Every year, for five years.
That's a steady increase. Wow.
How do we deal with it? How do our missions deal with it? How do our social services deal with that?
To need a major infrastructure change.
Yes.
Yeah.
There are not enough clinicians, psychologists and psychiatrists to deal with it. My middle daughter that we moved to be close to is a doctor of psychology and directs a contract organization that provides services for the for Marines and Navy veterans and active duty that are dealing with PTSD. She can't find enough clinicians to staff what they need. She's responsible for offices, every office west of the Mississippi and all of the Pacific Rim. So every military base, she has an office she has to supervise. And so that's a lot of offices for veterans. And they can't find enough clinicians. They're not graduating from our colleges. They're not getting that education. And that's just one segment of the need for that kind of service.
I think a lot of people who would have an interest in going into that kind of field, a lot of people tend to be going more in a holistic alternative therapy kind of approach. And I think that may be part of the shift, is that there's a certain line, a certain channel that people in her industry, in her positions, are only looking at. And that's because of the current infrastructure and the paradigm that infrastructure exists in.
You're exactly right. Yes. Mm. Yeah, you're correct in that assessment. And we need to change that.
We need to change that
perspective.
People need to be more open and aware of the extreme high benefit of alternative and holistic therapies.
Yes.
I think that would make a big difference.
Well, they're less invasive, for one.
Yes. Somatic therapies are fabulous, for one example. It was such a pleasure to sit down with Rawling Carl in his office at 72 Southwest Chehalis Avenue in Chehalis, Washington. If you would like to get involved, check out their website at lewiscountygospelmission.org. There you can find out more about their primary fundraising event, the annual dinner and auction from 4 to 9 p.m. on Saturday, April 26th. Tickets can be purchased through their website or by calling Janet at 350-966-4474. It will be held at the Centralia Christian School. That's it for today's resource report produced by Pathways to Agency. At Pathways to Agency, we are driven by the belief that everyone should have the tools and support to achieve their goals and thrive in their communities. Our mission is to bridge the gaps in understanding, accessibility, and trust by connecting individuals to resources and sharing information and processes that can lead to personal and community growth. Resource Report offers information about existing and emerging nonprofits and resource organizations. Find out more at pathwaystoagency.org. Chaos Radio is not responsible or liable for any views or opinions expressed in the interviews conducted by Resource Report. Till next time, and thanks for listening.